All right, I'm starting to think there's something to this Mercury retrograde for sure, because I just tried to get Brandon here on here, and Skype, it just did the weirdest stuff, man. You guys got to stop believing in this Mercury retrograde thing. You're giving it power for sure. So we're a little behind. I'm going to jump right into this, and we're going to go, yeah, we're way behind, actually. We're going to jump right into this. Now, I don't know if I mentioned, too, that since we were late, that we might have to skip one of the breaks, but that's all right. So Brandon Weston is a multi-generational Ozarker, spirit medium, and healer who has been collecting stories, remedies, and rituals from his own family as well as modern practitioners from across the Omari since 2012. In his most recent book, Ozark Folk Magic, he draws inspiration from the Ozarks' rich history by combining traditional knowledge and practice collected over the years and personal experience as a witch and a healer. Now, the book is comprehensive yet relatable look into a previously little-known system of magic and healing, and the work appeals to both those interested in the history of American magical history and Ozark natives seeking to reclaim and revitalize their own traditional culture. Thanks for coming on, man. Sorry about the tech issues.
Yeah, not a problem. Thanks for having me.
So what part of the Ozarks are we talking here? Is this Arkansas, or does it matter, or what?
Well, so I'm located in Northwest Arkansas, kind of the Fayetteville area, but really the research that I do is it encompasses the entire Ozarks region. So a lot of people, you know, associate the Ozarks with Arkansas, and you know, Northwest Arkansas is in the Ozarks, but it actually extends well up into Missouri, almost all the way up to St. Louis. As well as over into a little bit into Kansas and into Oklahoma as well. So the things that bond the Ozarks together are really the landscape, which is this sort of mountainous plateau sort of region, as well as a cultural identity kind of binds everything together. So when we talk about the Ozarks, it's a big area of space, which has, you know, really given birth to a lot of diverse practices from families to family and things like that.
Yes. So do you get a lot of gruff for this stuff? Like in art? Cause this area, we're talking about the Bible Belt here, man, you know, like, and have people treated you kind of weirdly because of it, or do you make it even publicly known, or do you kind of keep it private?
Yeah. So It varies from person to person. You know, when I started off doing this, I started mostly with family, collecting stories, things like that. I grew up in an Ozark family, and you know, there was a lot of sort of weird traditions that we had that I didn't really even think anything about until later on when I discovered that, you know, there's this thing called Ozark culture. And so reading folklorists and stuff like that, it kind of, you know, gave me a better sense about, you know, where my family was coming from, things like that. So collected stories of my family, then I kind of moved out from there. And so talking to Ozark people, it's kind of hairy sometimes. You know, it depends on the family, it depends on the area. I kind of learned language that I shouldn't use and language that I could use. You know, talking about magic was, you know, and still is pretty taboo amongst, you know, certain communities and families. So, but what I really came to find, you know, talking to old timers and, you know, modern healers and everyone in between, and what I came to find is that, you know, there's this very interesting magical core to Ozark folk belief. And even though it's masked under lots and lots of layers of secrecy and conservative values and all of this other stuff, this sort of core is there. And if you're friendly enough, if they trust you, if you're from the area, you know, you can kind of delve down into that if you're careful. And that's where a lot of the really interesting practices and folk beliefs are.
So is this the same thing as like when you hear people talk about kitchen witches and stuff like that?
Is that something different? So yeah, there's kind of a lot of different, I guess, words for it. Granny witches, you know, granny magic, you know, granny women. That was kind of a title for midwives and, you know, these older ladies in back in the hills who, you know, knew how to birth kids and take care of, you know, sick people. And they also knew some charms and spells thrown in there and things like that. So there's a lot of, you know, things that have popped up in folk culture in the Ozarks that, you know, on the surface level, you wouldn't really think much about, you know, the local midwife who knows some herbal remedies, things like that. Most people wouldn't, you know, think much about it, but there's a lot more to the practices, to the knowledge than you can see on the surface level a lot of the times. So yeah, kitchen witch, and you know, there's lots of different, I guess, terms and words that people throw out.
So is there an initiatic system to this? You know, like, yeah, is there an actual like lineage? Is it traditional? Is it the way witches do it? Or is it like one-on-one where you pass it down from one person to the next?
Yeah. So, in traditionally, which, you know, the modern, I guess, folk traditions in the Ozarks are kind of different. During the 60s and 70s, the Back to the Land movement brought in a lot of outside influences to the area that had, you know, otherwise been pretty isolated before that. So you have groups coming in that, you know, were a part of the New Age movement, practicing yoga, you know, all of these other things, you know, were also initiated into Wicca and British witch traditions, things like that. So they kind of brought in a lot of different practices to the culture that eventually kind of got assimilated in amongst modern practitioners. But traditionally, so we're talking, you know, early 19th century and then back to the early 1800s with settlement, traditional Ozark culture, there were very strict guidelines about how people could pass the power. And so it created lineages that were a lot of times based within family lines. Mostly out of convenience, because, you know, who are you going to pass your power to? Well, you know, a kid, a child or a grandchild, you know, that's going to be the easiest people to pass to. But the old system, the more traditional system, had a lot of taboos surrounding passing the power. The power, the gift, you know, it goes by a lot of different names, but it, you know, has traditionally been seen as a tangible thing. So, you know, one healer gave me a really good metaphor for it. It's like a tea pitcher, you know, like a pitcher of water. And, you know, you're born with a certain amount of water in the pitcher, and sometimes you can, you know, get more water in your pitcher by having practices passed to you, and you can also find them and, you know, barter for power with spirits and ghosts and things like that. And there's a whole lot of other traditions, but, you know, you only have that pitcher. And so you generally, healers would wait until the end of their life and go into a sort of retirement, and they would, you know, pass their, pour, you know, all of this water out of their pitcher into their apprentice's pitcher. And the power would be gone completely for the original holder, and all of it would go to the person they passed it to. But there's a lot of taboos, traditional taboos, like people believed you could only pass it cross genders, so man to woman, woman to man. And there's also age taboos, so people say you can only pass it older to younger. And then there are taboos within families. So some people think that you can only pass it within certain bloodlines. Unfortunately, today, you know, the modern healers that I've met, even though they kind of exist within this, at least some sense of a traditional Ozark culture, you know, most of the time their families had no interest in this whatsoever. And so modern practices have done away with a lot of the taboos just because, you know, out of necessity. You have the power and you don't have anyone in your family to pass it to, so you're going to pass it to whoever is interested. So that has kind of broken a lot of those family lineages. But I've met healers that still can trace, you know, the power back 5-6 generations, some of them.
So what kind of things have you been able to change in your life with this? that you know for sure was caused by the magic that you do?
I think for me, the magic has really just kind of transformed my relationship to my home, my relationship to the Ozarks, and my relationship to the ancestors, things like that. It has transformed just my relationship with the hillbilly stereotype, with the white trash stereotype, all of these things that kind of have been hanging over Ozarkers, you know, for a really long time. I think getting in touch with that and finding modern practitioners that still have these very deep connections to the land, deep connections to their own ancestry, to their own history, it really has brought out of me this connection to my own family. You know, growing up, I didn't really understand that I was a part of some other culture, and I didn't know that, you know, our language has a history, our folk beliefs, our religion has this history. And, you know, I found myself doing this. My parents did this. My grandparents, you know, you want to get away from the stereotypes. So you change your accent. You know, don't talk about superstitions. You don't talk about stuff like that. And so I think one of the, I think, biggest transformations for me and biggest healing experiences for me was being able to validate myself as an Ozarker, validate my history, and to be able to look at some of the things that, you know, in my own family that, you know, when I was a kid, I might have laughed at, but now I can see that, you know, things my parents said, the language that they used, the beliefs that they had, they have real roots, and the roots are powerful, and they are connected to, you know, this sort of bigger tapestry of folk belief around the area. And so for me, you know, as a practitioner, as a witch, as a healer, I think I experience a lot of things on a daily basis, connections to the spirit world and things like that. But I think really, like, the most powerful, the most transformative, magical experiences I have had is in just that personal development, that personal connection to my own past. And not just my blood ancestors, but, you know, amongst healers, there's this idea of ancestors of the work. And so it's the idea that other workers, other healers can pass into the spirit world and then actually appear for their healer descendants and help them along the way. And so getting in touch with just that side of the work, that it's deeply transformative, and I think that for me has been the most, I think, important part of this whole journey, and one that I'm still on. You know, I hope to have many more of those transformative experiences.
How many people do you think practice folk magic in the Ozarks to this day, if you had to roughly guess?
Wow.
Is it hundreds? Is it thousands? Is it maybe 20, 50? I mean, I wonder about that, because the occult and spirituality has kind of seemed like, I don't even know if I'd call folk magic the occult, but it sure does seem like it's picked up a lot lately, you know?
Yeah. And I think if we want to separate modern practitioners versus more traditional practitioners, I think that there are a lot more modern practitioners who sort of integrate not just Ozark folk magic, but also, you know, other systems of traditional witchcraft and things like that. I think that there are quite a few of those. I mean, hundreds probably in my area alone, just because it has become such a popular sort of phenomenon. It's a thing that people are reconnecting to, and yeah, it's great to see. I think traditional practitioners, it's hard to say. In the Ozarks, still to this day, amongst traditional practitioners, there's this deep sense of secrecy. And so, you know, used to, the secrecy was to protect you. You know, you didn't want to spill all of your, you know, practice and everything around town, because people are going to start eyeing you for a witch, and that's not a good thing. So, you know, that secrecy has had a function amongst Ozarkers to kind of protect people who have the gift, who have the power. but that has continued on and kind of remains within folk practice. So even though people aren't facing the same sort of, you know, imminent physical danger that they might have once faced, they still keep that secrecy. They still keep that around to protect the power, to protect the integrity of the work. It also stems from just this deep respect for the work, this deep respect for magic, for, you know, the natural landscape, for ghosts, for spirits. If you, you know, the highest form of respect is to not talk about these things. And that might seem odd, but there's a sense of protection in that. And so there's a famous quote from famous Ozark folklorist Vance Randolph, who wrote Ozark Magic and Folklore, and back in the 40s, he named one of his books after this quote. But it's, "We always lie to strangers," and that's kind of been a motto for the Ozarks for quite some time now. But it's this idea that, you know, it's not lying like we may think of it. It's not out of any malice, or, you know, it's not people being rude or anything like that. It's lying to protect. It's lying to, you know, keep the integrity of certain practices. And so for me, there's a lot of the work that I do that I don't talk about because I want to keep that, the integrity of that work. But I think that is one of the problems we have when, you know, we're trying to estimate how many practitioners there are. I think that there are a lot more than we know, just people working very secretively.
Well, I think there's a magical thing too. Like in magic, they say, you know, keep things hermetically sealed, right? Keep things silent. Because I wonder about that too. If you talk about some of the magic you do, then it kind of takes away from it, right? But why is that? Why do you think that is?
Well, so I guess in Ozark folk belief, or as I've been taught, a lot of the reasoning behind it was that you use your words to pass power. And so you can use your words to manipulate the power to, you know, magically heal, things like that. But you also use your words to pass the power. So traditionally in the Ozarks, all of the verbal charms, all of the healing remedies, even herbal home remedies, nothing was written down. And, you know, for a long time that was because, you know, a lot of people couldn't read and write, things like that. But it's a deeply oral culture. And so things were passed down word of mouth. And so it became an integral part of the actual system itself, this idea that the voice has power, words have power. And so, as I've been taught, you know, you only let people hear what you are doing or see what you are doing if you want to pass them the power. And so there's this folk belief that, you know, if somebody you're working on even hears your verbal charms or your prayers, that the power could pass to them. And that's taking water from your pitcher. You know, it's taking power from your work. And so traditionally healers would always say prayers and verbal charms behind their hand or whisper them, or sometimes they would say them just, you know, just in their mouth, not even voicing words. And that was, you know, it was less about giving away secrets and more, you know, the idea that the voice, the words have power, and you don't want to inadvertently pass that to people just kind of listening around you.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is like energy, right? Because when people's thoughts get into what you're doing, then their energy's involved with it. So tell me about your book. Is your book, does it have a system of folk magic in it? Does it have the history? What does it contain in the book? What are we going to get?
Yeah, so the book is a really good sort of beginner's guide, specifically to Ozark folk magic. And the interesting thing about Ozark folk magic is it kind of connects to a lot of different folk traditions in America, but also in Europe, Western Europe as well. And even we can even trace a lot of the practices beyond that. And so, you know, it's regionally specific, but I think anybody that's interested in witchcraft traditions or folk magic traditions will find things in the book that they identify with. And so it's a lot of theory in the beginning, because, you know, Ozark folk magic, like a lot of folk traditions, is deceptively simple. And so from the outside, observing a healer or a magical practitioner, you know, the rituals that they do, the work that they do, it might look very simplistic. And so we mistakenly sometimes think that, oh, well, this folk tradition, there's nothing to it. It's easy. It's, you know, all of this other stuff. And people have used that in a very derogatory way in the past as just saying, you know, simple superstitions or hillbilly superstitions, things like that. But underneath that, if you look at the actual practice, underneath that is it's a very complex system that works with all aspects of nature. And so in Ozark folk magic, there's what I call magical considerations, which takes up, you know, an entire chapter of the book, basically. And these are all of the things that add power to your work. And so these are traditional ways and modes that Ozark folk healers would have worked within. So, for example, working with the moon signs or the phases of the moon. So, you know, you do certain work when the moon is waning. You do certain work when the moon is waxing or on a full moon or on a new moon. And then you do certain work on with the zodiac signs, specifically the zodiac moon signs for every day. And so these signs determine the best days for certain practices. And, you know, if anybody's picked up a farmer's almanac, they know, you know, the best days to cut your hair, the best days to prune, you know, plants outside or cut bushes, things like that. But that sort of those zodiac best signs, it goes beyond just agriculture and you know, folk practices around the house. It extends to healing practices. So the best days to heal certain illnesses, you have to wait until the moon sign is in a certain, you know, zodiac position. And so there's all of this very complex theory behind Ozark folk magic. And I really, my intention with the book was to show people that, you know, simplicity can be deceptive, that the simplicity of the practice actually is a way of hiding a very complex system underneath. So, yeah, the first part of the book is theory. The second part of the book is kind of an encyclopedia guide to plants and magical compounds. So lots of different plants that we use in the Ozarks. The biodiversity here is very rich. We have a lot of plants that are only found here. And every plant in the forest has a medicinal use. And so there's a lot of those traditional herbal remedies and things like that in the book, as well as magical remedies. So, you know, how do you use, you know, plants you find on the land in a magical way as well as a healing way? And then there's also certain magical tools and things like that that, you know, in the Ozarks we have very specific uses for. One big part of that simplicity of Ozark folk magic is the repurposing of household objects for a magical use. So in the old Ozarks, people didn't buy special tools. In a lot of sort of ceremonial magic traditions, traditional witchcraft traditions, we see a lot of specific tools that are required. Folk traditions typically use what's on hand, and that's kind of cross-culturally. But in the Ozarks, there's a big tradition of repurposing household objects for magical use. So, you know, picking up a kitchen knife and using it to magically cut a hex off of a person, or using a broom that you have in the house to magically sweep a person's body of illness or sweep a curse off of somebody. So there's all this sort of repurposing of things that are on hand. And so in the book, I talk a lot about those uses. And then for both the plants as well as these magical tools and ingredients, I always give try it out at home sort of section where, you know, I offer up a ritual or a, you know, a remedy or something like that that people can can try at home, because I like having the theory, but I also really like having the practical stuff as well, stuff that people can try at home.
So what, I don't know if I might need to take a break. Well, let me just ask this one question. Has anything ever gone south on you? Like any operation or anything you ever did? Yeah, it didn't really work out. Can you talk about that, or would you rather not?
No, that's okay. Yeah. I think early on, when I was still kind of trying to find my path, I think I put myself in a lot of situations that the old timers would have never put themselves into. So part of the work that I do is I work in a traditional way as well as a sort of modern way. So the traditional way is, you know, certain rituals and verbal charms, prayers, things like that, that are specific to Ozark folk magic. I have a lot of that in my repertoire, and I bring it out and stuff like that. So people will call me for traditional house blessings, for instance, or traditional, if people think that they have spirits in their house that they don't want to be there, they might call me in and, have me clear out the spirits, things like that. And so early on, I was all about, using these newfound tools to help people out. And I had a good heart about it. You know, I just wanted to help people. But there's a lot of spooky situations that I've gotten myself into that I didn't have answers for. Now, looking back, I, of course, kind of, have come a long way and know what I should have done. But, just situations where... one specific situation that I can talk about, I was called to clear out a spirit in a house that was kind of, it was getting into people's dreams, giving nightmares, and, people were just feeling really bad in the house and all this other stuff. And I was pretty confident with myself that I knew what was going on and could clear it out. And so I went and I, did all of my stuff and, said, okay, well, it's cleared out. To the best of my knowledge, it was cleared out anyway. But then I got home and I started having nightmares. I was 2 hours away from that house, and whatever was there, a piece of it came with me. And so that was terrifying. So then I consulted some of my healer friends who, know a lot more than I do. And they gave me some traditional, remedies and things like that to get the spirit off of me. And then they said, you really should have assessed the situation a little bit better. Don't you know that this could have happened? Things like that. So looking back, it was a lot of sort of rookie mistakes. I'm very fortunate that I've never, had anything that, could have, taken my life or anything like that. I'm very fortunate about that. I've collected stories from healers where, they had more brushes with death than I would ever really be comfortable with. So I've been very fortunate in that I tend to overthink situations, which is good in this sort of work.
All right. Well, I hope that's helping people. I like this conversation so far. And I think we're going to learn a little bit more about folk magic too. We'll also open up the phone lines, and when we come back, more Lighting the Void coming up. Programmed with it to install the new playout system. Surely you guys want to hear Chronox again. You don't want to hear the Eurythmics. After this broadcast, Ryan Gable from the Secret Teachings will be on, and we'll have some new hosts coming in too, now that we're located in the high desert in Cottonwood, Arizona. And so I don't know what else to say about being here in Arizona, but I do know that I can't wait to go explore Sedona. But the Ozarks, we're kind of talking about tonight with our guest, Brandon Weston. He's here talking about folk magic and his book, Ozark Folk Magic. And I think this is going to evolve people too. I don't want people to be afraid of magic anymore, Brandon, but I also ask every person that practices magic that comes on the show, do you think, or what's your opinion? Do you think magic is dangerous or could be dangerous?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has the potential to be. I think, you know, for me, a lot of it is based in tools, and, you know, you can use an axe to chop wood, or you can use an axe to, you know, hurt somebody. So I think that it's traditionally in the Ozarks, you know, people viewed magic, at least from the viewpoint of actual practitioners and healers with themselves, they've always viewed magic as being neutral. And so it's this sort of gray area in the world. It's akin to nature itself. It's the force of nature itself. And so, you know, there's always been this debate about, you know, practicing white witchcraft versus black witchcraft, that sort of thing, black magic, cursing versus healing, things like that. But traditionally, you know, healers, they may have kept it secret, but they've always worked in a neutral way with neutral magic. One healer told me that, you know, magic is like nature itself. So if your house gets struck by lightning and catches on fire, was that an act of evil? Or, you know, if there's a flood and, you know,
right,
waters come through, is that evil? And no, of course not. It's nature. It's, you know, we can't apply these terms to it, although people have. So for me, I think, you know, I always caution people to, you know, take things slow, and, you know, working in a traditional way means working with somebody who knows more than you do. So finding a good teacher, and any good teacher is going to tell you, you know, both the good stuff that can come from magic and also all the cautionary tales of how, you know, this stuff can go wrong. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of areas within Ozark folk magic where things can go wrong. Traditionally, you know, there's people gain their power in a lot of different ways. And one of those ways has been making deals with spirits sometimes,
yeah,
you know, or,
right,
you know, making, in the Ozarks, we have the little people, which are like the fairies. And so there's a lot of healers that have gained a lot of power from making deals with the little people. But then also I met a healer who lost his vision, he claims, from making that deal. So there's a lot of sort of iffy areas. And I think that the smartest way to work is to not think that you are more powerful than you are. Take it slow, take it easy, and work with someone who knows what they're doing.
Yeah. So do you recommend your book for beginners? If people just wanted to start learning folk magic, would they start with your book?
Yeah, absolutely. So I wrote it with the intention of, you know, anybody can pick it up and start reading it. I really, you know, originally the first manuscript for the book, it was much more academic. And then, you know, I decided to go in a different direction with it and kind of open it up to a lot of different sorts of readers. And so I would say, you know, even if you are just, you know, casually interested in the history of these practices, I think that there's a lot the book has to offer. And then if you're interested in learning the practice, there's a lot the book has to offer.
So have you yourself, I'm getting a question here, in DM, have you yourself ever conjured a spirit?
Yeah, I mean, so part of the work that I do is as a spirit medium. And so I don't work in the same way that a lot of other mediums work. I do sense the presence of the dead and ghosts. I also work with those energies. But, you know, I can't necessarily contact Granny and pull her up at any given time, you know. So I work with spirits all the time. And, that's a big part of the work that I do. Those ancestral spirits that aid me in my work, they're kind of always there. And so I conjure up. Yeah, sure. I mean, I do that pretty much on a daily basis. But I would say from an Ozark perspective, you know, it's much more of a living relationship. And so there's no need to conjure the spirits that are always there. So it's just recalling to mind that they're there And sometimes certain spirits come to the forefront, and other times they don't.
You know, there was a question I asked at the beginning of the show, how can our perspective and experience transform what some may call superstition to that of something magical and powerful? I think I kind of believe we can take daily superstitions to, like, my favorite one is pink skies at night, sailor's delight. Pink skies at night, it means, you know, good things are coming your way if no matter what's happening in your life, you know?
Yeah.
So is it because we believe that, that it happens? Because I feel sometimes that can be detrimental too. If we get over superstitious about a lot of things, then we can't just kind of let things happen and let things be random too. Just curious what you think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the folklore of the Ozarks is full of, you know, these, what are called tokens, and tokens are omens, signs. And there are people that, you know, live their entire life constantly observing the tokens around them. So it, you know, it determines how they live, how they, you know, how they may be having a good day and then they go outside and they see a bad token, and that can change the whole course of their day. And, you know, I've met healers that look for tokens and signs and things like that. But, you know, as one healer told me, it's much better to live in the flow of nature, you know, observe everything around you and kind of live in that. Because the alternative is, yeah, like you said, getting overly superstitious. I mean, how, you know, rituals and things like that can end up ruling your entire life. For me, I work in a very sort of practical way. I work in a very simple way. What I encourage in my students is, you know, don't rely on a lot of external things. You know, the magic ultimately is inside of each one of us. And it's all about your intention and connecting with that magic within yourself. And I think that kind of goes back to that idea of existing in the flow of nature. So just kind of seeing where the river takes you, rather than constantly getting distracted by, oh, I need to do this ritual at this time, or, you know, oh, I saw this omen, and these, you know, things, you know, point to bad luck or whatever. I think that, you know, signs and omens and tokens, they exist for a reason, but it's much better to just sort of, I guess, be open to that sort of constant voice that's in nature.
So what are your thoughts on baneful magic? Things like cursing or love spells. I'm always curious to hear people's thoughts on this, because I know a lot of people are doing it and they justify it. You know, I could get a curse or something maybe for like self-defense in a physical way, you know, but it seems like some people use it for everything. I know people personally that do this, and they always have like hell that comes in their life too. I'm not saying it's because they're practicing this stuff, but they're dealing with negative energy, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not natural to, like, it's one thing when I believe when we have negative, like, I guess, negative natural feelings like fear or anger, things like that. That stuff is natural. It's raw emotion. It's part of the tree. That's the way I look at it. But to like invoke it, like a curse on somebody, you know, I don't know. Right. Or a love spell. I don't know.
Yeah. For me, love magic is much more of a,
like, desperate stuff.
Virtual area. Yeah. So the way I approach it, with curse work and stuff like that, the baneful stuff, the way I view it, traditionally, the healers and practitioners that I've worked with, they're much more likely to call it retribution work. And that's kind of a way that I've been able to sort of work with some of this stuff. Because, you know, it's not the idea that you absolutely never curse, you never work against anybody. That's not really there. It's all about why you're working in this way. And so, for example, like, you know, people, you might not curse somebody for no reason, but take like an abusive relationship or something like that. I mean, I've been approached about that from myself in my own practice. And so the idea is that the curse that you are sending is not to intentionally hurt somebody, but it is this sort of retribution work. I believe in, you know, you reap what you sow. And so, you know, one way to think about it is, you know, this sort of system of magic is really working as an extension of nature, the hand of nature. And so it's this idea that this person has been sowing these bad seeds, or, you know, sowing these seeds of violence, of whatever. And so I'm not cursing them. I am letting whatever they have sown come to harvest. I'm and so it's much more sort of like, I guess, a hand of karma at that point, where the work that you are doing is not intentionally to hurt somebody, but to make them see the consequences of their actions.
Right. And I see what you're saying. And I kind of do that. I kind of do that stuff when I do like return to sender, things like that, yeah, you know?
Absolutely. That's such a good way to yeah. think about it. The return to sender. I like that.
Yeah. So like, I mean, we can't help. I don't think we can help from bad or evil things being in the world. I really don't. I think they have a purpose, but when people do them on purpose to others to hurt them, whether it's violently or abusively or psychologically, I don't know. I think once you start feeling that stuff, and the older I get, the more intuitive I get, but the harder the lessons, right? So, you know what I'm saying? Like, not really more, I would say more intense lessons, but once you learn them, you gain so much after too. But if you can do like a return to sender, you hope that most people learn from that. So I think as long as we learn from it, it's okay. That's what I think.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a big part of magic is learning lessons. And sometimes the lessons that you need to learn are the hard ones. So sometimes you need to have a spell backfire in order to, you know, figure out how to work in a different way, a more responsible way. And so I, you know, while I don't like seeing it happen, I've definitely been on the receiving end of some of those spells that have backfired. But those have been such intense learning moments that, you know, looking back, of course, that's exactly what I needed at the time. Like with love magic and stuff like that, that seems to be one of those areas that there's so much room for stuff that backfires. You know, you want to attract this certain person. Well, are you prepared for them to be obsessed with you? That sort of thing. And so there's always this area whenever you're, you know, desperately trying to manipulate somebody's will that, you know, there's lots of room for backfiring, which right. is why I encourage people not to work in that way. I encourage people to sort of do the work that they would like to have done to them, you know, and kind of not play with those emotions and situations like that.
Well, I think that's totally true too. I don't, I mean, if you want to defend yourself, then just defend yourself.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. You don't have to do it magically or like to use poppet dolls and things like that, you know?
Yeah, right.
I don't know. It just seems really screwed up to me. It's almost like wishing, I don't know if you've ever had a panic attack, but I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. That's like dreadful, you know? And then some of the things that people wish on others, when you simply could just, I don't know, just defend yourself or deflect it. I don't. What's your thoughts on binding spells? I don't know. I'm getting kind of detailed now, aren't I? But I'm just curious.
I mean, so in the Ozarks, there's definitely binding stuff. I mean, you mentioned poppets, and in the Ozarks, we call them spite dolls. And I talk about them a little bit in the book. But traditionally, you know, it goes back to sympathetic magic, this idea that by possessing some materials of a person, you can manipulate that person. But, you know, and we most of the time we have the connotation of the voodoo doll filled with somebody's hair and you're sticking pins in it to hurt them, stuff like that. But what we don't think about a lot is, you know, the fact that healers also work in this way. So I've met healers who have, well, they wouldn't call them spite dolls, but they have representations of their patients. So people will send them pieces of clothing or hair or whatever, and so that the healers can work remotely. Because in a lot of cases, you know, healers that are, you know, have a presence on the internet, stuff like that, they may be getting people from all over the country. And so how are they going to work in a traditional way on somebody that's, you know, 1,000 miles away? And so in a lot of cases, they use the same methods that we have sort of the connotation of being with black magic or whatever, but they use it in the same way. It's just a different purpose. So it's manipulating the same energy, the same magic. But for a very different purpose, to heal rather than to hurt. So with binding, things like that, I mean, that's sometimes a part of the healing process. You know, removing a person from a situation or limiting a person's power in a situation so that they can't overpower you or overpower the person that you're working on. I much prefer to work in a transformative way. So rather than binding a person's energy, I like to work to help transform that energy. Because I, you know, I'm too influenced by Buddhism and all of this other stuff, altruistic systems, where I can't see myself hurting anybody. I want everybody to grow and to be successful and to be happy. So, you know, I may have an enemy, but I'm not going to work against that enemy. I might do some work to help transform, to help them grow in the way that they need to grow. But, you know, I'm not going to curse them or anything like that. That's where I think working with retribution work or transformation work is much more powerful. This idea that by bringing to light the consequences of somebody's actions through a ritual or something like that, that you're actually helping their transformative experience. And I've had a lot of cases where enemies turned into friends that way, just through a simple ritual. Where,
really?
Yeah, where they, you know, somebody working against me, and I could have easily, you know, worked against them and caused this whole thing, but I just put it to my spirits and my ancestors and just said, hey, help them see the light, help them see, you know, see what they're doing, and see the consequences of those actions. And yeah, I've had enemies turn into friends that way.
Well, that's actually pretty cool. I actually admire that, man. That's pretty cool. But I think these magical battles behind the scenes are kind of, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, how do you tell when I can tell when I'm being magically attacked, and I really just have a go-to thing that works like every time. But it comes, there's a reason why it works every time, but I can tell, and I wish I could explain how I can tell. It's like an intuitive thing. How can you tell? People ask that all the time, so I got to ask it. Like, how do you tell if someone's cursing you or you're being magically attacked or something like that?
I think for me, what I tell people to sort of is to observe their life. You know your life better than I know your life, and I know my life. And I know the things in my life that, you know, if this goes wrong, I know it has a physical cause. You know, if my car breaks down, it's because I have a crappy car, and I know I have a crappy car. But, you know, then there's the sort of other stuff, the sort of intrusions, the weird days you have where you just feel like nothing is right, or where you feel like there's a weird anger building up that isn't normally there, or, you know, occasionally I know something has happened if I have a really bad night's sleep, because sleep is something that usually comes pretty easily to me. So if I have like a weird night that's full of dreams, things like that, I know that something's going awry. What I normally recommend to people is, you know, if you're worried about it, you know, there's lots of things that you can introduce into your weekly life, your monthly life, to kind of just take care of that stuff. So I usually encourage people, you know, start a new moon or a full moon ritual. You know, it doesn't have to be anything complicated. It can just be a bath. you know, with the intention that you're just washing away the stuff you've collected over the month. Or, you know, a weekly ritual. I know people that they really incorporate ritual cleansing and purification work into their Sunday ritual. Because Sunday, you know, has connections to the sun, illumination, burning through those curses and things like that. So they may do like a weekly ritual, something like that. And so that's what I encourage in my own students is, you know, first of all, don't make enemies. It's a lot easier to make friends, first of all. But then, you know, also work in some weekly cleanses or, you know, a ritual or even like I said, the monthly stuff. That way you're kind of always covered. You're always sort of cleansing off things in a ritualistic manner, in a scheduled way.
Well, I think what I'm afraid of is, I think ritual is fantastic first and foremost, but I kind of get afraid, like if I take it too far, then I'm going to get dependent on that energy. Does that make sense? Like I don't, that's why I tell people, be careful about what you do or do this stuff slowly. If you're going to do a daily ritual, it does build up energy. I like magic to be kind of sacred and special. And I can tell you like that too. But there's like, you know, the people that do gematria and all these other things where they're just constantly decoding stuff till you feel like you're going crazy. I think I'm, you know what I mean? I think I'm worried that magic is going to get to that point, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I that's one of my worries as well. I think that there's a real temptation there to have it sort of be a catch-all, you know? If you don't have an answer, turn to magic. And I don't think that's always healthy. I don't think that's always what we should be doing. There is a sacredness about magic. There is a potency about it. You know, in the Ozarks, people, you know, rarely sought out the help of healers unless they absolutely needed it. You know, traditionally, there's this process of healing where you consult an herbalist first, you know, an herbal doctor, country doctor. And then if the illness persists or gets weird or, you know, moves around your body, things like that, you might try some stronger medicines. But then if it persists or you have weird dreams or bad luck, fear, things like that, these sort of magical illnesses that pop up, then and only then do you consult somebody who knows things. And there's this idea that even by consulting somebody who has this power, you are the recipient of that power. You're taking in that energy, you're taking in that power. And for a normal person, you know, somebody that's not working with this stuff all the time, that can be a powerfully transformative experience. And so people, you know, traditionally were scared of it. That's why, you know, all of these sort of stereotypes about the witch have popped up, is because people were frightened of this power. They were scared of people that had it. And so I think that, you know, I don't want people to be scared of this stuff. I want people to be interested in it, but I want people to realize that this isn't, it's not mechanical. It's not materialistic. It's spirit. It's energies. It's, you know, you can't always define it. You can't pin it down. It doesn't work always by your schedule. It's free flowing. Once you open that door, you know, there's a lot of things that can come with that. And so I always encourage that with people I'm talking to, this idea of, you know, whatever work you are choosing to do, whether it's ceremonial stuff or folk magic or whatever, connect to that heart, that spiritual heart of the work, that foundation of the work, because that's going to keep you through, you know, all of the hard times when things don't work out so well, or when things maybe work too well and, you know, you suffer the consequences of that.
Yeah. That's what I'm afraid of, too. Things that are going to work too well sometimes, you know, what else does folk magic like to get into astrology? What correspondence systems does it use? Cause you know, everybody, they all kind of use, some people use the Tree of Life, some people use the elements, the watchtowers, or does it not have a correspondence system? You know what
I
mean?
So with in the Ozarks, it's very connected to the zodiac and also the planetary system, but in a folk way. So the understanding about the zodiac signs, I mean, we might call it simplistic, but it's an understanding of the zodiac not from an astrological or an academic sort of way. And so typically, you know, hill folk that I've met, you know, they plant by the signs, by the signs of the zodiac and also the moon phases. They do all sorts of things by the zodiac, but they don't necessarily understand what the zodiac is. They know that, you know, certain days are ruled by certain signs. In Ozark folk healing, we use the man of signs a lot, which is, you know, every part of the body has a corresponding zodiac sign. And so that can influence healing, working against certain illnesses in those parts, and also strengthening or tonifying certain parts of the body. But talking to healers, you know, modern healers, you know, everybody's really into astrology and things right now. So modern healers, you know, most people have an understanding of astrology, but old timers, they know it's connected to the stars. They know it's connected to constellations. But that might be all they're willing to say about it. But yeah, in the Ozarks, it's heavily influenced by the zodiac and the moon phases. I think that those two things are the easiest ways of empowering your work. I always encourage people, you know, there's this idea in Ozark folk magic of going with the flow of nature, not trying to work against it. The easiest way to go with the flow of the river is just to let yourself be carried by the river. And so that is, you know, the course of nature is working with the phases of the moon, working with the signs of the zodiac, these sort of cycles that we have. That's going with the flow in the most basic way. And then on top of that, you can build a boat. And that's using tools, prayers, verbal charms, connections to spirits, land, things like that. So it might get you down the river faster, but I think, you know, just going with the flow of nature is what people encourage a lot. There is a sort of vague sense of the elements, but it's not like in Wicca or other traditional witchcraft traditions where, you know, certain directions have correspondences, things like that. There are directional correspondences in those arcs. So, you know, each direction sort of has associations. For instance, the East, which is kind of common across folk traditions, at least Western folk traditions, the East is kind of the direction of healing, the direction of light, of, you know, the new dawn, this sort of rebirth, cleansing, things like that. In the Ozarks, the opposite of that is the West, which is seen as the land of sickness. It's where all evil goes. And so a lot of healers, when they're working, they will work to send evil in that direction. So they'll send it down the river and let the river carry it into the West where it cannot come back, that sort of thing. And then there's other sort of associations with directions up, down, things like that.
Yeah, man. So you do have a lot then, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, there's a lot under the surface.
Well, I think this is cool too. If you could teach somebody on the air, like what a simple folk magic thing would be, what could we all do? Just something that's kind of harmless but maybe helpful.
Yeah, so I always like to teach people making house charm bags. It's kind of a traditional Ozark thing to do. You know, people have found these bags full of different objects and things hidden in walls and old cabins and hanging up and things like that. So it's just sort of a general protective amulet. And, you know, in its simplest form, you know, it's a bag filled with these sort of symbolic objects. And one that's really easy for people to do, you just take like a little cloth bag, like a drawstring bag. You can even make one if you have some sewing skills, make one out of cloth. Usually they're white. sort of symbolic of purity and protection. Sometimes they're also red. Red is a color of protection in the Ozarks, or also vitality and health. And so just a little drawstring bag filled with three nails. And so three is a connection to, you know, sacred numbers. It obviously has Christian overtones, but it also has deep connections to ancient numerology and things like that across Europe. And nails, new nails, so none that you have already used. Newness in Ozark folk magic is sometimes a very important thing. But just three nails. And the nails, the idea is that the nails will trip up evil before it can come inside your house. So you can do a bag like that over your front door. I do it front door and back door. Any exit from your house, you can just hang them up above the door or beside the door, and it'll keep away all the bad stuff that wants to come in.
Cool. That's a pretty cool one, and very simple too. Pretty cool one and very simple. I like the word, folk magic. I think it's cool sounding, actually, you know, like, cause I've heard things like kitchen witch and then hoodoo. I don't really get it. I haven't practiced a whole lot of stuff, practiced a little hoodoo, but, had no idea, man. I've been to the Ozarks quite a bit. I had no idea. I knew there were people doing it, but you don't think about it too much. Right. And, how long does this tradition go back again? Did you talk about that already? Folk magic or the Ozarks?
So the practices in the Ozarks, I mean, really solidified the early 1800s. So that's when the Ozarks became the Ozarks, essentially. So around the time of the Indian Removal Act, the Osage, who were the indigenous people in the Ozarks at the time, they were removed to Oklahoma and the land was opened up. And so before that, there had already been some settlement, but it really opened up for people to come in. And the only people that were crazy enough to come to the Ozark Mountains and, you know, scrape out a life were people from Appalachia. So people from, you know, Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, mostly, which my family is, you know, pretty much parts of my family goes all the way back to the early 1800s. And then before that, they were all from Tennessee, Kentucky, West Virginia, places like that. So there's this really strong connection between the Ozarks and the Appalachians, which is, I usually encourage people, if there are gaps in your knowledge about the Ozarks, look to Appalachia. Look to, you know, like the Foxfire book series, which is a great series that they did in Appalachia years and years ago, but it's all about Appalachian folkways and stuff like that. So the practice itself really was born in Appalachia amongst hill folk that were from all over Europe, mostly the British Isles, Scotland, Ireland, Wales. But then there's also a heavy German influence. So they came and sort of practices were evolved and solidified, and, you know, this whole melting pot effect. And a lot of it was mixed with African traditions from slaves, and it was mixed with indigenous traditions, with indigenous peoples of the Appalachian region. And so all of that was kind of mixed together and then brought over to the Ozarks. And the isolated families, practices just sort of changed and evolved from there. But it's really interesting to look cross-culturally. A lot of our verbal charms, these sort of secret prayers that people use, these have been passed down orally for thousands of years. a lot of these charms, researchers have been able to find Latin variations of these charms in Appalachia and the Ozarks. You know, they find them in medieval Europe. Almost exact translations. They've been passed down. So there's a lot of prayers and things that sort of developed in the Ozarks, but there's a lot more that has been passed down generation after generation, all the way back to, Middle Ages, but then also certainly before that, pagan Europe. There's a lot of connection there.
Well, this is getting more interesting and more interesting. I think, getting down to the history of it, you start learning a lot of things too, right? So,
oh yeah.
I wonder, like, do you have kids? Just out of curiosity.
No, I don't.
No kids, right? So if, does it hurt if someone that you don't want to see, like say you're doing a ritual or something like that, and they walk up on you in the woods or something and they see you, does that affect your ritual? Or
no, I don't believe it does. I think traditionally, you know, some of the old timers, they would definitely think that, you know, at least some of the power of that specific ritual might have been taken. I think, you know, traditionally, what you just really didn't want people to hear your words. That was a big thing. So, you know, observing ritual motions or, you know, the sort of performance wasn't necessarily, you know, a bad thing. It's a lot of it's based in the language, in the words. So those things were really protected. So if, for instance, I'm working with a person, I still will usually certain prayers and charms I'll say aloud for the benefit of the person to hear. But then there's a lot that I don't say. There's a lot that I say behind my hand or under my voice, things like that, because I still have that connection to, you know, part of the practice, or I guess part of the magic of the practice is in that secret, that secrecy, that sort of, I don't want to say performance of secrecy, but there's something in that sort of psychosomatic connection that is a, you know, an integral part of the healing process for some people.
I think this is good stuff. So I would really like to get your book. How can people get your book? Do they need to go to Amazon? Do you have it on Audible? How do they find your book?
Yeah, so the book is on Audible. You can get it on Amazon. It's pretty much any online book retailer. I've even seen it popping up bookstores on eBay, you know, these sort of bookstores that operate on there, and is BarnesandNoble.com bookshop. And then it is in selected sort of physical locations. It seems like every day people are messaging me saying, I spotted your book in such and such shop. And, you know, somebody just messaged me the other day that there was a pagan store in London that's carrying it. And so, you know, you can look in your local bookstore. Oddly enough, they might have it. And if they do, you know, listeners can always send me a message and let me know. I always like to see where the book has gotten. But yeah, certainly online. There is an Audible version of it if people want to listen to the audiobook. But yeah.
I love audiobooks. I learn quite a bit from audiobooks. Well, it's a good thing to learn when you're busy. Use audiobooks. I like to read too, but I don't know. I like it more when I hear the voice. Do you guys use the pinnacle, the pentagram a lot in folk magic or no?
So not in the Ozarks. I think the connotations with that is probably, you know, not something most people would want to encourage. But, you know, the modern Ozarks, you know, people where I live, I mean, there's lots of traditional witches. There's lots of people that connected to New Age. So there's pentacles everywhere here. But once you get into the rural areas, it's not one of those traditional symbols.
I think that would wig people out, really.
Yeah.
You know, the Ozarks is kind of trippy, right? Because those people are super traditional, even more where I was from in southern Arkansas. But I don't want to ever meet. I met one person up there that I don't know if he was a folk magician or not. Doesn't matter. I don't think he was a magician at all. But there's like mountain men. You ever heard of mountain men? I met mountain man one time that I talked to, and I was at this peat stand or whatever near Calico Rock, and he came out and he had some trinkets in his hand, and he told me they were magic trinkets, but then I couldn't, honestly, I hope this don't sound bad, but I couldn't tell if it was a guy or a girl, and he was really hairy, and my buddy was like, oh, that's a mountain man. I said, I never even heard of that before. And so people talk about it, Like, it's an Arkansas thing, and I'm from Arkansas too, so I understand what you're talking about, where people try to degrade you and stuff like that. But yeah, it was pretty trippy. It kind of scared me a little bit.
I grew up here in the Ozarks around some mountainy people, but I, in my travels collecting stories and stuff, I have met some mountainy people that, you know, put my mountain people to shame, like, you know, some very, very mountainy people. I've met people that you couldn't hardly understand a word they were saying. And I'm a language nerd too. So I'm always interested in where words come from and stuff like that. And there was one guy that I met that, so Ozark dialect of English, as well as Appalachian English, has heavy Gaelic roots, so Irish, Scottish language roots. And so there's a lot of words that go back to Gaelic. And so this guy, I could have sworn he was speaking Scots Gaelic or something, but he was supposedly speaking English, just, you know, with a very heavy accent. So yeah, there's a... I kind of like living in this area, though, because there are still wild places like that. And I think that they're, you know, those are few and far between in a lot of places in the U.S. So I'm kind of honored to be able to, you know, go out to the woods and feel like I'm away. You know, I'm not in the city. I feel very blessed to be able to have that stuff around.
Well, I am... going to get into this a little bit. I didn't even know that it was that big of a tradition in the Ozarks. I knew a few people did it. Let me get to some more questions here just real quick. Let's see. Is magic most effectively passed on through practice and tradition? So do you think it's more effective if someone handed it down to you, passed it down to you one-on-one, or by reading books?
I mean, I think that both are equally as powerful. I think it has everything to do with the intention that you put into it. And I think, you know, a lot of the practices that I use, the most meaningful practices for me, I didn't learn from anyone. I developed as I was working. And a lot of it is spirit-led, too. So working with your own guides and guardians and things like that. And so I think that, you know, there's a lot that people can learn from books. I think that that's a perfectly valid way of learning. I know a lot of people will, you know, a lot of people hate me for saying that as far as like folk magicians go and stuff like that. But I really do believe that you can learn a lot from books. It all has to do with the time, the energy, the intention that you put into it. And if you're willing to keep at it. I do encourage people to try and seek out practitioners if they can, because I think it's easier to work with a practitioner. But in the Ozarks, the problem is finding somebody. And so I owe it. That's part of the reason I put out this book, was to help people that couldn't go out to the woods and find somebody to work with.
Well, do you have any other promotions or anything you want to tell anybody before we get out of here? Because I know we got to go.
So if people have any questions or anything, I have a website, ozarkhealing.com. I also have a Facebook page, Ozark Healing Traditions, and an Instagram account, Ozark Healing Traditions. So there's lots of ways to connect to me. And with the pandemic and everything, I started doing virtual classes and lectures and stuff like that. And I'm hoping to do some more this fall, so people can connect with me on the website and maybe take some of my classes.
I'm very interested in that. I'd like to take some of those classes too. And I'd like to have you back on the show and talk to you a little bit more. I'm sorry about the delay, man. I had that crazy headache in my eye. It was insane, no problem, man. Seriously, but do you recommend? Oh yeah, I gotta ask this question. Do you recommend anybody else any other books on folk magic besides your book?
So if people are interested in specifically the Ozarks, Vance Randolph wrote a book, Ozark Magic and Folklore, and it's a great resource. It's pretty much the only thing on the Ozarks that has been written specifically about, you know, the weird stuff, witchcraft, folk healing, stuff like that. But I do tell people that, you know, keep in mind the book was written in the 40s, and it's very good information, but it's very dated. And it originally was published under the title Ozark Superstitions. So it's just keep that in mind, but it is a really good work. I also recommend, if people are interested just in American folk traditions and witchcraft traditions, New World Witchery. So Corey just put out a book, New World Witchery. He also has a podcast where he explores folk magic traditions and witchcraft traditions around the U.S. So it's a really good book. If, you know, a lot of people, they don't realize that their area that they grew up in has its own folk traditions. And so picking up a book like that can help sort of suss out some of that stuff.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, I think we got a couple of more minutes here. Do you guys do meditation too? Do you have a meditation practice that folk magic does?
Yeah, so I do. That's just something that I've kind of incorporated into my life. I know working with a lot of the sort of traditional healers, you know, a lot of them weren't religious. They didn't necessarily go to church or anything like that. But, you know, seems like every healer I've worked with has had some sort of meditative practice, even though they might not have called it meditation. So it might have been going out and in the early morning and sitting in the woods or by the lake or river or something and just sort of being with yourself and with nature. So I think that's a big part of Ozark folk magic, is this sort of just shutting up and connecting to nature. So yeah, I have that as a part of my work, and that's something I definitely encourage for people to sort of develop. It doesn't have to be complicated. You can just sit for a few minutes in quiet. But I think it's a really good thing to pair with any sort of ritual tradition.
All right, brother. Well, thanks for coming on the program. I really appreciate you coming on. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, guys, we're going to get out of here. We'll be back tomorrow night with Mary Ducina. We're going to have the new moon broadcast with open lines. You guys have a good night. Sweet dreams.